Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
On this episode of Bad Signal, it's a Tuesday, so we got all feelings, no facts. I've got a lot of heavy-duty emotional baggage I need to dump on y'all.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, it's going to be heavy, and it's going to come out of left field, but it's really just what everyone else is thinking about the 2-4 New England Patriots and what a disaster they put on performance-wise. The worst loss in Bill Belichick's coaching career at the hands of the 49ers to a quarterback which he had on his roster, who was the predecessor?
He was supposed to be.
Supposed to be the predecessor to Tom Brady. Jimmy Garoppolo, who, I don't know, he's still a decent quarterback.
Didn't he look handsome doing it too?
I mean, I don't care about him being handsome. There's been plenty of handsome players that have walked in and out of the Patriots locker room, but I don't know, talent-wise and looks-wise, there's nothing left. You can tell I have a lot to talk about there. The breakdown of week 7 and the rest of week 7, that's going to be coming at you. We're going to do first half roses. Can you believe we are halfway through the NFL season?
I can't. It's flown.
There have been really only 2 cancellations of games.
I know. The NFL has handled this surprisingly well.
They have done a surprisingly great job with the COVID situation. Just hopefully. I mean, everyone needs to wear a mask, stay safe. Stay safe.
Wear a mask. Save a life.
Yeah. Well, not even that. The country is just getting really bad, especially here in Massachusetts. Over 1,000 new cases every day. Scary situation going into the colder winter months. People staying inside, the circulations, all that good stuff.
Yeah, we got an election coming up, too, I think.
Oh, Jesus.
Maybe we'll get into that.
if Trump wins, the world is going to burn. And that's not getting political. I mean, either side.
Yeah.
I think if Biden wins, the country's going
to
burn.
I'm interested to see if Biden wins the transition of power, see
oh,
how that
Trump
works.
Will literally, like, handcuff his ass to the Oval Office. It's just going to be so fucked up.
We'll see.
Okay, so we're going to get into, a little intro in that. And, yeah, the first half roses, that is in honor of our guest. It's Bachelor season. I mean, how many goddamn episodes or seasons of The Bachelor are there?
Oh, fuck. It's...
It's
got to be on, like, season 30 of The Bachelorette, maybe. Bachelor's far... I think The Bachelor might have, like, 35. There's been a lot of seasons.
It's like Kardashian long. I mean, they're 20 years strong. 20 seasons strong. I hate The Bachelor. I don't know anything about... I've never watched more than 5 minutes of The Bachelor, surprisingly.
You know, I've had ex-girlfriends who were into it. But Chris was our guest who got into
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, by the way, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, spoiler alert. We have Chris Bukowski as our guest today. He has spent many seasons on The Bachelor.
He spent the most time in Bachelor Nation. That's what the internet says.
He's a very handsome guy. I met him this summer. He is deeply involved with Major League Lacrosse. And yes, we're coming to that episode where I'm going to talk about my other job.
A little lax.
Sideline reporter for Major League Lacrosse on ESPN, even though that was just kind of a one-time thing. But the season's coming back next year, and hopefully we'll have a full real season. But yeah, he's a member of the Denver Outlaws organization, so we talk a little Bachelor. Who doesn't want to bullshit about what's going on behind the scenes of a reality TV show? He kind of gives the spiel.
Yeah, he gave us some nice insight as to what actually happens.
And, updates on his social life, too.
Yeah.
Personal life. I don't know. We get into all that. It was kind of a fun interview. But first, the Patriots.
Are you disappointed with the way the offense played today, given that you did have a full week of practice this week?
Yeah, I just said that in the opening statement, Ben. I said that we didn't perform well enough in any area. Coaching, playing, offense, defense, special teams, running, passing, defending the run, defending the pass, ball security, tackling, blocking, none of it was good enough. Maybe I might have left something out, but I mean, we just got to do a better job all the way across the board. I don't think everything was bad, but there was enough bad for the result to be bad. So we need to improve in all areas.
We are halfway through the NFL season. That is unbelievable to me. Time is flying. But what is even more unbelievable, and that I cannot believe, the Patriots at this point in the season have absolutely no direction, no solution at the quarterback position. Given everything that's happened with Tom Brady in the offseason, not only this offseason, but the offseason before and the offseason, well, during the season before when they traded Jimmy Garoppolo with the proposition that Tom Brady stepped forward to Robert Kraft and threw a fit, cried and said, "You better get this kid out of here because I'm going to be staying here and I'm going to be playing until I'm 48 years old," or whatever that he said. The organization and the Patriots, they're wrong in so many different ways. I have so many different thoughts about it, but the fact that they have the hubris to stand there and pick up a guy that no one else really wanted. I mean, we haven't really talked about it. We glorify Cam Newton, and as great as he is as a competitor on the field and as great as he's been with the media off of the field, we have to go back to the thought now that, yeah, 86 days, no one wanted this guy. And maybe there's a reason that no one wanted this guy. Because as of right now, he's regressing before our eyes. He's regressing in so many different ways that the Patriots were absolutely blown out of the water, embarrassed. Cam Newton threw 3 interceptions and he was benched by Bill Belichick, which rarely happens. The Patriots, over their last 3 games, 3 losses, had 33 possessions and 11 turnovers. And that goes down the list of quarterback 1, quarterback 2, and quarterback crap. That's Cam Newton, that's Brian Hoyer, that's Jared Stidham. How did they end up in this position? I don't understand. Now, are the Patriots, are they tanking? I don't think so. I would say given another couple of weeks because, yes, much to the demise and the disguise or, you know, as my producer is smirking at me right now, the Patriots, they play the Bills this Sunday, who are leaders in the AFC East.
They sure are.
Okay. If they beat the Bills, if they happen to beat the Bills on the road, which I think is highly unlikely.
That's a capital IF.
Okay, well, they're only 3-point favorites. If the Patriots happen to go on the road and get their shit together and they beat the Bills and then they beat the Jets the following week, they're only 1 loss out of the lead in the AFC East, just in the division. And as we've been looking at the AFC East in this division right now, it's turning into the NFC East, which... Listen, I'm totally fine with that happening right now because every week it's a sway of the, you know, position of power. And for the Patriots to say that they're completely tanking or they're out of it, not so fast. The biggest concern that I have with the lack of confidence in the quarterback position right now is the trickle-down effect that it's having on the rest of the team. Will, I have not seen a Patriots team that has kowtowed so quickly on the defensive end that at the end of the second quarter, it was like the levee broke. The Red Sea parted and the defense just gave up. The defense gave up. That's the strength and the power of this Patriots team and has been for the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, I can't stop smirking. I mean, your misery is kind of bringing me a little bit of happiness here.
Oh, that's so nice. So, on that note, blame pie. The blame pie has got to go around. We got to talk about it. I think the focal point of this team and the problems start and end and finish with the offense and the offense regressing and why this team has put together 2 historically bad games that has not happened in 20 years. And that happened, the 2 games that they put together back-to-back, they haven't been this historically bad since the year 2000. And that was before Brady. So, on that note, who gets the blame pie? Is it Bill Belichick? Is it Josh McDaniels? Is it Cam Newton? Or is it the management?
Is this one of those rhetorical
questions? It's, oh yeah, so Will answers all my rhetorical questions. That's just how I speak. Yeah, guess what? It's all 4. We'll start with Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick believes that he can coach out of anything. And don't get me wrong. I am the biggest Bill supporter. They're out there, period. I think that he is a brilliant mind. It just goes to show that, you know, he has 8 rings at this point in his career. He's going after Don Shula. He's going to take down Don Shula. But as of right now, the talent gap that they have on offense, on defense, on special teams, the wide receiver position, it's inexcusable. And the fact that they have gone through at this point in the season, he has gone this far to not pick a quarterback that is efficient enough to move the chains is absolutely embarrassing. He had the opportunity last season to jump into a very robust free agent market for quarterbacks, and he decided to go on the cheap. Now, the Patriots right now, back then, they only had about, they had less than $1 million in cap space. They could have restructured Dante Hightower's contract. They could have restructured Stephon Gilmore's contract. They chose not to do so. He could have drafted one of the top quarterbacks in the first round. He could have, he passed on all of them because it didn't fit his system. Now his system is failing. So what is he doing now? He decided to go after Brian Hoyer on the cheap. He decided to go after Cam Newton after those 86 days that no one wanted this guy and signed him on the cheap, though he looked like a genius. He decided to stick with a fourth round quarterback selection in Jarrett Stidham that right now, his career totals, 13 of 27, 4 interceptions. That is awful. I mean, listen, as much as you want to give the kid all of the confidence in the world to stand up and say, hey, we're going to give you a full week of practice. We're going to put you out there, get all the reps. This kid doesn't got it. He ain't got it. So, Bill, how the hell are you going to coach yourself out of this? Because when you decide that you don't want to spend the money, when you have someone like Teddy Bridgewater who has $20 million, a $20 million salary, and he damn sure earns it, He could have gotten Tom Brady. Clearly, he didn't want to do that.
Jameis Winston. There were a lot of guys.
I mean, at this point,
so many people.
Exactly. So my lasting thing about Bill is that now he has put together the worst possible scenario for himself. You have every pundit, every media member, every national media member, every local media member, every Patriots fan across the country playing general manager. Oh, you should take a flyer on Gardner Minshew. You should take a flyer on Tyrod Taylor. I would take, Mitch Trubisky.
There are a bunch of good quarterbacks in this draft.
Oh, I mean, they should draft down. They should draft this. They should. Every fucking person across the country right now is playing general manager and more or less telling Bill what he wants, what they want to do, what they want to have happen to their franchise and what they believe is going to happen to their franchise, what they believe is best for the New England Patriots. That is the last thing that Bill Belichick wants. Someone to tell him what to do.
Especially while he's eating shit. Like, this season he's eating shit. There's no other way to put it.
He has put himself in a predicament, and he better damn sure coach his way out of it the next 2 weeks. The next one, who gets the blame pie? Josh McDaniels. Now, Josh McDaniels has stayed in this organization for a number of years, has turned down a number of different coaching opportunities across the league.
Well, he took one.
He took one. He stepped back. I mean, listen, Bill Belichick took one, and he resigned on a napkin, saying, I resign as HC of the NYJ, okay? So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree here. Do we not believe that... it's not that do we not believe. I'm pretty sure I'm just going to make a statement and not a rhetorical question. Josh McDaniels is a byproduct of Tom Brady. For the last 20 years, Tom Brady's success and Bill and Josh McDaniels' success have gone hand in hand.
Yeah, what's the evidence on the contrary?
What we're seeing right now. How come you couldn't take any Joe Schmo quarterback, quarterback one, quarterback two, and quarterback crap, and put them in this system and make it work? And what we're seeing right now with Josh McDaniels and the way that he's been handling Cam Newton. At the beginning of the season, Cam Newton threw for over 400 yards in Seattle. He was running a lot of RPOs and the same stuff that he was running in Carolina. He looked like a genius. Of course, this wasn't sustainable just because of injury purposes. Cam throwing his body around like he did, it just... brings together a scenario that you don't want, that, you know, the one sustainable quarterback is hurt. Josh McDaniels is trying to make Cam Newton into the quarterback that Tom Brady was in New England, and that's not the solution here. Why is he making him sit back in the pocket, survey the field, go through his progressions, and make a throw. Because if you saw that game on Sunday, not only was his arm not up to snuff, maybe his shoulder is not, you know, is not as healthy as we think he is. Maybe his, you know, the COVID is still in his system. He's still shedding the virus. They're making him go through and sit back in the pocket and make progression throws. And this guy's holding onto the ball for 5-6 seconds. You can't do that. You cannot do that. He's playing, not playing to the strength of Cam Newton. So he gets some of the blame pie. Speaking of the quarterback, let's start with the other quarterback. I don't know. Jared Stidham, drafted in the 4th round. This guy was the raving quarterback one, the successor.
He was the belle of the ball.
He was the belle of the ball. And the funny thing is that everything that you've heard, and I gave you the numbers and the stats on Stid, everything that you heard from training camp was that this kid sucks. He was throwing picks and interceptions like left and right. Oh yeah, he's got the arm strength. Well, if you don't have a game plan for the kid, and if he can't study the playbook, and he doesn't have the attitude and the compete level to step up and say, I am the number one quarterback of this team, how the hell are you going to place him into a situation where he's stepping in under the shoes of Tom Brady? It's just not going to happen. Now, when Brady was the quarterback last year, the Patriots were 8-0, and he ran off the last 7 games or 9 games of the season. He was 4-5, and they lost to the Titans. Now, you could say that's a byproduct not of Josh McDaniels and Brady having a bad attitude and Brady not being happy in the system. It could be a byproduct simply of the fact that they don't have any weapons. What have they done now? What have they done in the last year that has added to this roster?
I'm not sure. I can't really name a Patriots draft pick in the last 2 years.
N'Keal Harry. I'm done with him. Out. See you later.
Yeah, there you go. There's one.
N'Keal Harry. I am over that shit. Okay? The kid, he's broken. And for all of the comparisons about Bill Belichick not being able to draft a first round guy, we saw what Deebo Samuel did with the 49ers last week. We saw what DK Metcalf did in week 2 against Seattle.
Those are both second-round guys, too.
Yeah, second-round guys. They drafted N'Keal Harry, number 32, in the first round.
Chase Claypool, second-round guy. The guys are out there. The guys are out there, and they're not hitting. The Patriots aren't hitting.
Is anyone surprised? He's a defensive guy, and I don't know who he's consulting for these offensive minds, but at this point in the season with Cam, whether or not it is his mechanics, they say that his mechanics have been fixed. I don't think that his shoulder is as healthy as people think. And I, going back with the snaps, and I'm going to take a play from everyone else, you know, my colleagues in New England here, Cam hasn't thrown to the right side of the field in the last 2 weeks. Can he just not do that? It's like he's Zoolander, he's a model. He can't turn right.
He can only turn left.
Well, that's a problem, okay? Because these guys are getting wide open, and the communication on the field isn't good. And, I mean, the guys who he's targeting, Demir Bird, Isaiah Zuber, forget it. Let's go with the no-names for the rest of the season. I don't care. Ryan Izzo, if he wants to be a part of the offense, that's great. Julian Edelman looks absolutely miserable. He doesn't look hurt. He looks miserable. And if he's not going to be as part of the offense as a lot of people think that he should, I don't know, get rid of the guy right now. Sell high. That's all I'll say. Moving on to the management. And I think at this point, we all know that it goes back to Bill, because the continuity in this organization, it starts with Robert Kraft. It goes right to Bill Belichick. It goes through Nick Caserio, who is the director of player personnel. Them believing that they have enough coaching to get them through a season like this is naive. It's naive. And now they've really welcomed the worst case scenario for this team, because not only are you allowing the world to see Bill Belichick get absolutely embarrassed in one of the worst losses that he's had ever as a coach, a home loss with the Patriots, but you're now seeing the eminence and the rise of Tom Brady. And that relationship between Belichick and Brady that all of a sudden when Belichick was winning, Tom Brady wasn't doing so good. But now Tom Brady has 18 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He's not leading the league. I think that's Russell Wilson. But you're in a scenario right now where he's now handpicking the old guys from the Patriots offense. He's sending dudes like Tony Robbins to go fix his brain. Antonio Brown, that being. It's
a little kooky.
It's embarrassing. And, you know, while Bill Belichick is failing as a general manager of the New England Patriots, Tom Brady is now playing player manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He has full personnel control of that offense. And when I heard that Antonio Brown was going to the Bucs, great. More reason for me not to watch Bucs games. Again, everyone who's listened to this podcast understands that I just don't want to see it. I don't, you know, Tom Brady's doing well. That's great. The Buccaneers are becoming a powerhouse in the NFC. Congratulations. If I was a wide receiver for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'd be like, what the fuck? Why is the spoiled brat getting more toys to fill the offense? Great. Bruce Arians, laissez-faire attitude. They're just going all in. He's a veteran coach. They're going all in on this season. But, I mean, are we going to see Tom Brady retiring at the end of this year? No. He's going to want to stick it to Bill the next year and the next year. So, with the Patriots failing and them not having a solution for right now, and the world trying to convince themselves if they're going to be 2-5, 2-6, if they're going to be way under 500, Tom Brady right now is having the last laugh. There were a lot of feelings that I just dumped on everyone's eardrums just
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I felt it.
Yeah, you felt it? Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the show, Will.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
It's good to be back. Listen, when I need to take the stage, Will just doesn't understand that I speak in rhetorics.
And rhetoric.
That's how I talk. Listen, if you're going to be a solo podcast, radio host.
A personality.
You have to have like the up and down personality. You have to ask questions. You have
listen.
To... Listen. Listen. I know.
Give it to him.
Oh, my God. Ugh. The verbal crutches that I use, I will go back and hope that I didn't use as many verbal crutches as I did.
Well, as long as you're so, like, conscious I about know, it. As long as you keep it in that prefrontal cortex or whatever the fuck it's called.
Well, that's one of them.
Yeah, you know.
I have to mentally keep it at the front of my mind to pause instead of saying it. Mm-hmm. It's coming gradually.
Yeah, it'll work. And like the uhs and but that I think I struggle more with uhs than you do.
I think you struggle more with your betting lines than anything.
I went 14-3 this weekend. So college
congratulations.
Football.
And on that note,
All feelings,
no facts.
Let's do it. You wanna go first?
No, I think you should go first.
All right, let's do it. The NFC West is really, really
good. Oh,
they're good and they're fun.
It's because the Seattle secondary is more porous than a cheesecloth.
Mm. I like that analogy.
Cheesecloth?
Yeah.
I like it. I use a cheesecloth.
All
cloth.
Of their secondaries are bad.
Oh my God, it's so bad. I'm telling you, that was one of the most exciting games that I've seen in a very long time. And you have to recognize how far the NFC West has come.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because that literally was the NFC East and the AFC East is becoming right now. That was the one division.
Be careful about the AFC East.
That was the one division, as I may finish,
yeah.
That you could go 7-9 and still make the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, top to bottom. Like the early 2000s, they were always bad. I remember Sam Bradford back in and when they were St. Louis Rams and Carson
and
Palmer
Chris, and
was
Chris
slinging
Long
it out there.
And that whole, oh, my God, that team. Torrey Holt was great, though. So many great franchise players, and I remember listening to an interview with Steven Jackson. Like, there are so many phenomenal St. Louis Rams players, like, I mean, that could be, technically. Steven Jackson potentially could be a Hall of Fame player.
You could make the argument.
You could totally make the argument. But, I mean, what are they looking at, like, right now? Watching Sean McVay and the LA Rams, who went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago, they must be killing themselves.
Oh, I know.
That the franchise is in good hands with a phenomenal stadium, with an even bigger fan base, with even more national headlines and attention. That just must suck.
Well, the uniforms are fucking gross, though.
I mean, all of the uniform, all the Color Rush uniforms are garbage.
The ones last night were hideous.
Well, they still won. All the feelings, no facts. Speaking of the Rams.
Let's go.
A former Rams running back, Todd Gurley.
What about him?
Made the biggest faux pas of all time. The Lions have lost so many games last second, but for once, Matt Patricia crying and crawling for his job. He's still going to get fired at the end of the season. I've talked to a couple of the reporters up there in Detroit. Todd Gurley, with like a minute and 10 seconds left, 10-yard run. They were supposed to drain out the clock. And this dude is running full speed and then just stops on a dime and like crawls in a fetal position on the line, trying not to score. Okay. All feelings, no facts. Todd Gurley scored that touchdown on purpose.
Oh, 100%.
Incentive-laced contract. And after the game, he was like, I'm so fucking mad that I did that.
No, he said, I'm mad as hell. I'm mad as hell. What do you say when you're not really that?
I'm mad as hell,
no.
Oh,
that extra poor... $500K on my contract doesn't look that horrible, though.
Put that on that ass.
No, and the funniest thing is, like, you can't, like, I remember specifically that play because he was on my fantasy team a couple years ago where he fell down to eat clock. Now, you could say it could be a coaching thing. You know, Sean McVay is a better coach than Raheem Morris. Well, we'll say a more experienced coach than Raheem Morris right now. But he made the same play fucking 2 years ago where he just fell down.
I'm telling you, Raheem Morris, he told Todd, he told them to, like, drain out the clock, put a running play. The Lions had no timeouts. They had to snap the ball through that hole. I mean, very impressive drive on the following play.
Oh, yeah.
It was incredible.
Matt Stafford reminded you who he was.
He's a fantastic quarterback. He's got an arm. He can gunsling. We watched, what was it? I watched the end of that game because but it was bonus coverage, but it was perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like my own personal red zone with my YouTube TV.
Fuck yeah. All feelings, no facts. He scored on purpose.
Are we sharing the same all feelings of facts?
I think we are on that one because that motherfucker scored on purpose.
Okay. All right, back to me. All feelings, no facts. Fuck fantasy football. It is not real life. My fantasy team is so unbelievable. Like, I have 5 wide receivers that I have to rotate constantly because each of them gets at least 17 points. Like CeeDee Lamb, Kenny Golladay, Tyreek Hill, who else? Robbie Anderson, he's in my flex. I mean, I am stacked.
Are there 6 teams in your league?
No, it's a 10-team league. Okay. I have Aaron Rodgers and Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray, like, making, God bless you, he gets my first rose.
He's so cute out there, too.
He literally has been saving my season. Because every time that I literally start screaming and kicking myself for the fact that I have Aaron Rodgers on my bench and he threw 4 touchdowns, breezy. Kyler Murray just comes out like 4 total touchdowns, 200 yards on the ground, whatever he put up on that game on Sunday Night Football. He had like 43 points.
Oh, yeah.
I was playing Tyler Lockett, 50 points.
PPR full?
Yes.
Oh,
50 fucking points.
Yeah, I
okay?
Tyler Lockett also.
I put up 148 points. I lost by 6. Like, the week before, I lost by 2. And I'm putting up the points. And I guess you could say that that's all that matters when it comes down to it. But, like, my fantasy team, even Matthew Berry, I was asking him. I was like, all right, like, I'm going to do the professional thing and ask a professional.
Sure.
Who to place on my, you know, my roster. It doesn't matter. It's like fantasy football is not fucking real life because I went 11-3 on my picks this weekend. Okay. Like 11-3. Like, I know football and I'm not even going to, it's just fantasy is not fair. It's just not
it's
fair.
It's not fair at all because
it's just not fucking fair. Like, why?
I have a bunch of like journeymen and Josh Allen is my quarterback and I'm just making a muck of all my leagues. I tried to draft relatively similar players. I'm in a 16 team league and a 12 team league and I'm doing great, boss. Like, to be honest with you, I'm doing great.
Don't give me fantasy advice because I just don't.
I won't give you fantasy advice.
I have Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I have
his
Kareem
touches
Hunt.
Are going to go down.
I have Kareem Hunt.
Gradually.
I have the Bears defense. I have, who do I have as my kicker? It doesn't matter. Oh, I have Justin Tucker, the Ravens
kicker. Yeah, the Ravens kicker who doesn't miss.
I have no solutions. And I just, it's really, it's funny because
you think it's a management thing though?
Fuck you. Okay? Management thing. I know exactly what I'm doing. It's just a crapshoot. It's literally a crapshoot every single week. Like, hey, what team is not going to hit the under? Like, every team hit the over. like what the two games.
I think only like three or four games didn't hit
the two
under,
games so. that didn't hit the under. I mean, I should have. Oh, I have Chase Edmonds. I don't, dude. I can't keep.
You seem really rattled. About
I'm
your
really
fantasy
pissed.
Team.
I'm really well. I'm just competitive, but like it's fucking.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done.
All feelings to the facts. The Bills will not make it through the first round if they keep playing like this on defense. Oh. I know they love the single high cover three look. That's Sean McDermott's staple, but they got to do something different, man. AJ Klein, get him the fuck off the field. He misses tackles like you wake up and brush your teeth in the morning. It's just like, all right, I'm going to go on the field and miss a fucking third down tackle. Let him go for 8 yards
to
carry.
That's so frustrating. I can't
tell
you.
It pisses me off so bad that they won't make any adjustments. Zero.
Well, they're playing the Patriots this weekend. I'm sure that they will tackle that offense in great fashion. By the way, I totally think that Brian Hoyer is going to be starting this Sunday.
You think Brian Hoyer is going to be starting?
I think that Bill is going to bench Cam. He cannot take another chance with that. I mean, the guys, his emotions are down.
But wouldn't you want to say, because the Bills have like one of the worst rushing offense or defenses rather in the league, that you want Cam Newton in there?
I want them to move the chains, and as sad as it is, that's the only guy, the last time he was on the field, three drives of 13 players or more. Like, they just need to put plays together. Yeah. Vegas, and maybe, oh, wait. This was my other hot take. So Brian Hoyer starts and Cam Newton comes on in a Taysom Hill type role. RPOs. Fuck it. Why not? Like, seriously, there's nothing else working.
They got to try something.
No, but right? Like, yeah. That would be cool. That would be
just
cool.
Putting your OC hat on. No, I'd like that.
That would be so cool.
I'd like that. But is Brian... You know, we were talking before we went on air. You know, is there just that big of a talent gap in New England that they can't compete with the rest of the league? And we talked about the coaching.
I don't think so. I mean, they have plenty of running backs. I think that they've been hurt. Again, we talked about this and so many times. You lose continuity on the offensive line, your whole team is fucked. It really starts within the trenches, the battle in the trenches, whether you're going to get pushed, whether you're going to set a fortress around your quarterback, whether he's going to have time to throw, whether your run game's going to get going.
Yeah.
Whether you're going to have ability to pass. And then it's still, you know, when you can do that, you have time of possession. So really, offensive line is the most important group on the field. And they lost Shaq Mason and they lost Shaq Mason to COVID, Jermaine Illuminor for the season. So they've been shuffling guys in the offensive line. They had David Andrews back finally at center. Joe Tooney, I don't know if he's 100%. I think he got a little hurt.
He looked a little banged up lower body.
A little banged up. I mean, listen, that's your number one trade piece. He's not fucking staying here next year.
At least on the offensive side, yeah.
He's not fucking staying here. So.
What do you think is going to happen this weekend? Do you think the Bills will come through?
Honestly, that's just the biggest. I feel like I'm not numb to the fact that what's happening with the Patriots, because you clearly just heard that, 20-minute rant where I'm just placing blame pie on everyone.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? I think that they're going to completely flip the script. Like, they're just going to turn everyone on their heads and try something different and just go back to the fundamentals, man. And I really think the fundamentals start with Brian Hoyer. I mean, again.
Mr. Fundamental.
I don't care if he throws two picks as long as he moves the chains. Again, what is Josh McDaniels doing to Cam Newton? He's trying to turn him into Tom Brady. And you know, the fact that Cam either doesn't grasp the playbook as much because he didn't have the time signing on with the team in June or late June, it's not working out for this offense because it's a different look that the team has not practiced enough. So I think that they're going to put Julian Edelman down. They're going to say, all right, the Demir Byrds and the What is the other guy?
Isaiah Zuber,
but the, you know, Gunnar. Give me some Gunnar Olszewski. Give me Dalton Keene caught a pass. Thank God. Like, what the fuck is up with Devin Asiasi? Like, that was supposed to be like the big breakup.
Yeah, he was supposed to be.
Oh, the week before in fantasy, I dropped the Dalton, what's his face, on Dalton Schultz on the Cowboys just to take a chance on Devin Asiasi because everyone was like talking about it that week. Zeros.
So it didn't work out well.
No, it didn't work out. But
want to talk? Okay,
I think this could be like a high scoring game, like because you
that's
know
that's exactly
you,
what I was gonna say.
You know how each team kind of plays up to their strengths. If the Patriots are playing up, and I'm not knocking the 49ers, But I mean, they're just they're the bottom of the NFC West. Okay, they're the worst team in the NFC West right now.
Between them and the Cardinals, yeah. But we already talked about it's a loaded division.
Again, but they're the worst team in the NFC West.
Yeah,
the Patriots are now playing the best team in the AFC East. Typically, you play up to the competition.
Yeah.
So they're on the road. The pressure's on. They know what's going to happen when they lose. It's, you know, then all the wheels are going to fall off. So I think that there is a lot of pressure. I think the Patriots, I mean, I'm not saying that they're not locked in, but the captains on that team, including Devin McCourty, he said after the game, like, this is absolute bullshit. No excuse that we should be playing at any way at this level.
He played a really good game, too. He played well.
Yeah, he did. I think he missed I heard his name being called a couple tackles. To be honest, the Patriots are suddenly becoming the fucking Red Sox, man. They're becoming unwatchable. The product on the field is becoming unwatchable.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a Bills fan my whole life. I know what unwatchable football looks like. Yeah. And that 49ers game, it was really hard to watch. Another thing that was hard to watch was Andy Dalton in Dallas.
Do you want to move into our next final segment?
Oh, this is all feelings, no facts.
Oh, all feelings, no facts? Yeah. This is roses.
All feelings, no facts. I got one more.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
So much for Andy Dalton. It's just so much for Andy Dalton.
So much. Oh, poor. Do you know that this is his first concussion ever?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, first.
His first ever recorded NFL concussion. Yeah. And that the player who hit him, I feel Bostic, he's not even getting a fine.
Jonathan Bostic?
That's fucking bullshit. Players, plays like that, I mean, he took his goddamn head off. Plays like that, it makes you wonder if the commissioner is still picking and choosing. Or he's laying off on penalties. Maybe he's laying off on penalties in the league because he doesn't want teams to lose players because of COVID.
It's potential.
It's not suspending guys.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Also, I think you have to take into consideration that it was Andy Dalton getting hit. I think Dak Prescott gets that flag. I think that 95% of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL get that flag.
Yeah.
But because it's Andy Dalton, you know, of the first couple of years of Josh Allen's career, I watched him get thrown around.
I feel like that's just a rite of passage for NFL quarterbacks. Right. We talked about this before. Ryan Tannehill, 57 sacks at one point in his rookie or second year season with the Dolphins.
Oh yeah.
Joe Burrow, you see what's happening with him, getting absolutely demoralized.
And it happened again this Sunday.
Oh, poor Joe.
But he's got balls the size of cantaloupes, man. He just keeps coming. I like Joe Burrow a lot. He's
going
to have a great career. I hope it doesn't turn into like a Matt Stafford type situation because he does have two really good receivers on the outside in T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, but until that general manager decides not to sign him, what happened with A.J. Green, and then who else did they had Mohamed Sanu.
Yeah, they had Mohamed Sanu
and A.J. Green, they were burners at the time.
Yeah, but AJ Green is such a flight risk on the injury side that you can't count him
because
in.
He's
on
undersized.
16
that's
games.
Why.
Yeah, undersized. I said just frail. He's just frail. Yeah. He doesn't look like he'd hold up. He looks like more like a sprinter than he looks like a National Football League athlete.
Final thoughts before we move into our fantastic guest, Chris Bukowski. Many times on The Bachelor, he has ties to Major League Lacrosse. So just FYI, before everyone listens to this and says, Courtney, this is a shit interview, and oh my God, that's so boring, I know nothing about lacrosse. Lacrosse is like soccer and basketball all into one, fast pace.
And a little bit of hockey, too.
A little bit of hockey, but faster pace, more goals, more physical. It's a fantastic game. And as much as I don't want to mention this in the same breath as Major League Lacrosse, but the Premier League, PLL, that everyone seems to love and every ESPN reporter is just pumping out merch and wearing merch and promoting it. There's a lot of ties to Ivy League schools, the Mid-Atlantic schools, Long Island. It's a very East Coast game. But I just think that the future is bright. I really feel that lacrosse is going to be the next sport that's going to be up and coming, that people are just going to be watching more. It's going to be more on your screens. It's going to be more in your face.
Yeah, it's sneaking its way out to the Midwest, into the West Coast. I know Denver University won a national championship a couple of years ago. Yep. I had a couple of friends that went there. It's making its way. It's making its way to the mainstream.
Lacrosse is a sport. They're trying to make an Olympic sport. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, over the last, I mean, people don't need to know this, not relevant to the interview, but it's fascinating because the Native Americans,
the Iroquois Nation, yeah.
Yeah, so they call it the Creator's Game. So, you know, they used to skin cows and use that as leather. And
That's where
and
I live,
literally hawk wood and, you know, Bill Belichick has multiple original lacrosse sticks hanging in his office.
Oh, shit.
Because I've been in his office. So as lacrosse is trying to get into the Olympic Games, I think in 2028, that's the next summer game. This summer,
yeah,
2024,
not these ones, but the next one.
But they're trying to make an Olympic sport in 2028. So it's become the World Games in 2022. That's how, that's why lacrosse is going to be really in the mainstream over the next couple years. And the Native Americans just had to fight for their right to be recognized because technically they're not a country. So
sovereign territory.
Yeah. So the Olympic Committee didn't recognize them as, you know, a group. It's just fascinating. There's many storylines to lacrosse. But and on that note, we're going to give out some roses. Some mid-season roses.
Yeah, first half NFL, you know, roses.
Just
why not?
Kind of like because of The Bachelor, we're going to give out some roses.
And we're feeling nice.
My first rose goes to Baker Mayfield. I just want to thank you for destroying Odell Beckham's season this year. Because as you do well and then your season's going to fall apart, you are just going to be a bigger trade piece to come to the New England Patriots and become the new successive quarterback of the Pats.
That's such wishful thinking.
Oh, I listen, out here, we love the commercials, plenty of media opportunities here. You can have your personality. It will only be like semi-harsh on you, you know, in the media, but...
Semi?
Baker Mayfield, here's my rose. Please come to New England soon.
Would that be a red one, a white one, or a yellow one?
It's going to be pink. It's going to be pink for admiration.
Yes,
yeah.
I like that.
I have a crush on you.
I like that. Okay. it's pretty obvious where my first rose is going to go.
Josh Allen.
And that's to Josh Allen for taking the next step. I'm so happy that the Bills are in first place. I don't want to say anything else. I don't want to jinx this weekend.
Okay.
It's going to be great.
You give him a big boner red rose.
I give him, it is the biggest boner red rose. It's like
your whole fist.
It's so funny because, like, he's the first quarterback that the Bills have had my entire life that's been good, but he's also younger than me. So it's weird to, like, cheer for a guy that's, like, 3 years younger than me. And just balling out. But thank you for taking the next step, Josh. I look forward to watching the rest of your career. You're going to be awesome. You're going to make Buffalo title town. Go Bills. Bring the Sabres with you.
I am going to give my next rose to Romeo Crennel.
Romeo.
Oh, what a sweet little teddy bear. I think he's now the oldest head coach in the league.
He is.
More than Pete Carroll, who I believe is 71. So Romeo Crennel, even though he's the interim coach, oldest head coach, and I think the Texans will have a big bounce back year under him. Mind you, back in the Patriots dynasty, the first dynasty, Charlie Weiss, most underrated offensive scheme any Patriots team has ever had, okay? He sucked at Notre Dame. That scheme that he had in place was so sick. I mean, that was the Randy Moss years.
Yeah.
So,
but how can you say it's unsuccessful if the team was successful?
No, I said successful.
Yeah, I know, but you're saying underrated. I meant to say how
underrated
you say
because he left, and no one looks back on those years and says, "Oh my God, this offense was built around Charlie Weiss."
Oh, that's true.
That's what I'm saying. Across the hall from him, Romeo Crennel, and I just think that Romeo's going to have a great year. So I'm going to give him a white rose, just for peace.
Yeah.
I want him to like really just feel at peace around him. No turmoil.
Oh yeah.
Just. Please don't have a losing record.
You can probably predict where my next rose is going.
Okay, I don't know.
Teddy.
Oh, yeah, you love Teddy.
I love Teddy. Well, Teddy I mean, two gloves, Teddy
Teddy's
top
helping,
10.
Teddy's helping Robbie Anderson with my fantasy team,
yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, the Panthers covered the spread this weekend. He only had 5 incompletions, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He's just good, man. There's nothing else you can say about him other than, you know, maybe give him a couple more weapons, maybe give him a little more time in the pocket. But that's a good Saints team. And they hung with him the whole time. He's been having a great year. And I want it to continue. Teddy top 10. Print the shirts.
My final rose goes to Kyler Murray. My God, you are an animal. The way that you have made yourself just an icon in the league. The speedy Gonzalez of the desert. He is never to be counted out. I mean, he's like a foot shorter than his offensive line.
Oh yeah.
And I remember that was a huge question. It's like, how is this guy going to be able to have the vision and throw downfield? Well, I mean, along with Cliff Kingsbury, who I think could be, well, I don't know.
Sean McDermott's coach of the year.
It depends on, no, I mean, like coach of the year goes until the very last second. Because, you know, if a team like the Arizona Cardinals make it out top of the NFC West, then you give it to Cliff Kingsbury. And Kyler Murray, keep doing what you're doing.
Love it. My last rose, my final rose, is going to go to Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert. Wow, what a fucking team you've put together.
I called that they were gonna upset the Titans.
What a team you've put together. Over the last couple years, didn't have Big Ben last year, so you couldn't really see how good the defense actually was. But I looked back at the stats from last year; the defense was tremendous. And having Big Ben back and adding Chase Claypool, legit number one outside. Wow, Kevin Colbert, great team, and they're the cream of the AFC.
Yeah,
and they rose to the top this weekend.
I would even say that they're better than the Chiefs. I don't know.
I think they've looked better. I think that, like, if you were to sit down and look at the Pittsburgh Steelers.
100%.
If you were to sit down and, look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, you say, what are their holes?
Yeah.
What do they not do well? And you can't really, like, I didn't see much.
Even Chase Claypool had an off game last game, and Juju Smith-Schuster just stepped right in. That's a winning franchise. That's a winning team. When one player doesn't play well, the other one is just ready to step up when his number's called.
Kevin Colbert.
So there you go.
We're done giving out roses?
Giving out roses. On that note, Chris Bukowski.
All right.
It is an honor and a pleasure to introduce you to one of my good friends from this summer, from Major League Lacrosse, from the Denver Outlaws, Chris Bukowski, who also happened to be on many episodes of The Bachelor. So it's a timely, timely interview. How you doing out there in Denver?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Let's just get right to it. What are some of the similarities of playing high-level lacrosse and comparing that to The Bachelor? Because it is Bachelor season. I guess that we should preface this for everyone that's listening to the podcast. There's a lot of, like, the demographic is about, like, 25 to 45 male. So we won't get into the details about, like, what's going on with the show. I just want to hear about your experiences. So, like, compare the two. How do you compare lacrosse? How do you balance a life of lacrosse and The Bachelor?
Well, they're both very competitive. So, you know, you're competing to win on the field, and then, you know, on The Bachelorette, you're competing for a woman. So it's, you know, you're fighting for a prize, I guess. I would hate to call it a prize, but I guess you're looking for your wife on The Bachelorette. So both very competitive. And at the same time, you build kind of a brotherhood, too, with the guys that you're there with, and just like you do in team sports.
We did some background research on you, and it says that you're dating a fellow Bachelorette alum, Katrina Badowski. Is that true? Dating profile.
We need to update that about, let's see, maybe about eight, 9 months.
Okay. I mean, yeah, because I was thinking in the summer, you know, giving some glances across the field, I was like, this guy's single. So, I mean, like...
Yes, I was very single in Annapolis, still am. But yeah, Katrina and I hung out for a little bit. This was probably back in like January.
Oh, so you guys just hung out. See, there's different levels.
Yeah, we didn't really date.
Like, oh, there's different levels of like what the media wants to portray and like how a guy says, oh yeah, I dated this girl. I was fucking this girl for like 7 months, but yeah. We were just hanging out.
So oddly enough, we were supposed to go out in a group like date on Valentine's Day in Chicago, and the two other people bailed on us. So it was just me and her. And then someone was like snapping pictures of us while we were sitting there, and then like got out to the press that we were, you know, dating. And this was shortly after, because I got engaged on Paradise last summer. This was shortly after this engagement broke off. So it was like this whole thing. Even though we were just hanging out, like getting drinks.
Do you have commitment issues? I have
clearly, clearly. do you have commitment issues?
I just stay out of the relationship game. I just say, I don't,
I agree. I'm at that point.
The guys that don't want me. That's the problem with me. But do you have commitment issues or mommy issues? Like, what would you define? I mean,
Commitment issues for sure. I don't know. At this point, it's like, I kind of like my life on my own, you know? So it's like, if I'm going to commit to someone to, you know, spend the rest of my life with, like, she better be great, you know, at this point. So,
like me, I'm fucking
exactly. There you go.
So you have the most appearances on The Bachelor. How does that explain your lack of game, I guess?
Lack of game? Who has a lack of game? Are you saying that from like hands-on experience or?
I'm kidding. It's a joke. Yeah. So the most appearances on The Bachelor, like, how are each of those different? You know, like I really want to know how reality TV has changed over the course of the years. I mean, the first time I remember reality TV was The Real World, and it was like The Real World, then Road Rules, and obviously
Survivor.
Survivor was a big one. There is just a different level of expectation for the personalities that they place now in the onset of social media. How has it changed over the course of, you know, your years on The Bachelor?
Well, so the first time I did a show, I was just turned 25 years old. So I'm 34 now. So I've been doing this over the course of almost 10 years. And it's changed tremendously. And you said it at the end there, all because of social media. So when I first started doing it, you know, Twitter was like the thing. Instagram just kind of started happening maybe a year later. And now it's just like these people come on just to build their social media, you know, clout.
It's true.
So it was way more authentic back then. You know, we would get excited like if we saw pictures of ourselves in magazines or, you know, something along those lines. Now it's just like a whole different animal, just, you know, Instagram. And it's a lot younger cast too these days rather than the way they had it, you know, back in the day.
Are the contestants on the show as fake as you think they are? Because I think that that's something that's such a lure of like The Bachelor. These contestants are just, they're just putting it on for the show, whether or not they put on a front that they're stupid and they don't know so that they become America's sweetheart or they're the tough guy or then the mean guy. How much is it the contestants and how much is it the producers behind the scenes pulling the strings?
Yeah, it's a mixture of both. I mean, the contestants know that if you're not some kind of character, then you'll get the axe. I mean, if you're not part of the drama or if you're not funny or if you're not mean, it's like, you know, they don't want you there. So you kind of have to be involved or have some kind of different personality that isn't, you know, boring. But the producers, honestly, you could sit there and say nothing the whole time and they'll make it seem like you're either the worst person in the world or the best person in the world just based on the unbelievable editing that they can do.
I'm not surprised. Were you shocked at any point after watching yourself on TV? You're like, that didn't happen.
Oh, all the time. I actually stopped watching. So after like the first two times I was on, I really didn't watch anymore.
Join the club. I haven't watched more than 5 minutes of The Bachelor. Our last guest, Joey Molinaro, was like, hey, Tuesday night, you watching The Bachelor tonight? I was like, I'm watching football. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, give it a chance. I was like, nah.
Yeah, no, it's if you watch like one episode, then you even if you don't like it, you kind of get hooked on it. It's tough, but it's actually better to watch later on. We don't have to watch the commercials too if you record it.
Did it seem less contentious while it was happening than like while the final product was coming out? I guess that's kind of, I guess it's kind of the similar question.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you're there, you're not really thinking about what it's going to look like, to be completely honest. And if you're honestly, you can't like if you're too careful, they'll get you. I mean, they're making a show. Before you even get there, they know what they're going to do with you. So it's, you know, you only have so much control.
So do you feel like you've been manipulated by the producers of The Bachelor?
Every time. I think I have them figured out. At this point, like, I have, you know, seniority on most of the people that are still there. There's very few producers that still work there from when I was first on the show. Yeah. So I mean, they get me every time, you know, they're great at their job. You know, you trust them, you think they're your friends, but at the end of the day, they're doing their job.
Scummy, scummy, scummy. Which season of The Bachelor was your famous? Was your favorite?
Probably the first time I was on a show, and then the first spinoff I was on that doesn't exist anymore called Bachelor Pad were probably my two favorite seasons I was on.
Yeah. What do you still keep in touch? You said you keep in touch with some of the dudes that were on the show. How many close friends would you say you have still?
I mean, mostly more acquaintances than close friends. A couple close friends. Yeah, it's most of us don't live, you know, close to each other. Here, I'm actually in Denver right now, obviously, and there's a lot of dudes that were on The Bachelor at, you know, out here. So, you know, we find each other here and there and hang out. But I wouldn't say I have too many close friends from the show.
Have you? What are your thoughts on the current season? Because that's about as big of the research that I did. I didn't do any research on the current season because I was like, listen, like no one's going to want to listen to what's going on with The Bachelor. I'm sure that everyone's wives or girlfriends will update them. But can you give us like in a minute, like a synopsis of what's happening this season?
Well, so for me, I haven't really watched much of it. It's very easy for me to follow what's going on just by going through my Twitter timeline. But Claire, who's the Bachelorette, she's 39. Oddly enough, I actually went on a date with her on the first season of Bachelor in Paradise. So there's a connection there. So the whole thing is, you know, she's the oldest Bachelorette ever. Obviously, this was being filmed during a pandemic, so they didn't travel anywhere. They just did this on one location out in California. And she pretty much is into just one guy super early on. The guys aren't happy about it. And I'm pretty sure tonight is when, I don't know. This is what I've read is when.
Okay. Just spill it. We want spoilers.
I'm pretty sure she quits the show tonight. No. And I think a new bachelorette takes her place. Yeah.
But does she take the guy that she likes with her?
That's as far as I know.
Oh, yeah. That's gotta happen. Come on.
Yeah,
if she's gonna dump out, then she's got to be like, I'm taking my man with me too.
I'm pretty sure because she's only really into this guy. So,
wow. See, during a pandemic, that would be a fire storyline. I gotta ask.
It's great. Yeah.
Is the host of the show Chris Harrison?
Yeah.
Chris Harris Jr., like the old cornerback for the Broncos. That's where my mind's at. Is Chris Harrison? Is he a real one?
No, Harrison's a good one for sure. I think, since I've been around him so much, obviously you get more comfortable with each other. So, you know, he's a good guy for sure. And, he's funny. He's witty, makes a lot of money. but no, he's humble. He's a good one for sure.
Okay. Would you ever go back on one of the seasons or you're done?
At this point, I never say no, because it's like, you know, you would always think, why would I ever go back? So it's like, listen, if it's next summer and I'm single and, I got a couple of weeks to spare, why wouldn't I?
No, you're not going to have time because you're going to be in the middle of a Major League Lacrosse season. And on that note,
yep.
The Denver Outlaws. Ooh, this was such a fun summer, man. And for everyone that doesn't know, obviously all the seasons got canceled during the pandemic. And Major League Lacrosse was the first, outside of Major League Soccer, Major League Lacrosse was the first league to come back. And they condensed the entire season into a 10-day set in Annapolis. I mean, the timing of that, being in Maryland at the end of July was pretty brutal. It got up to 126 degrees on the field, up to 140. I got heat stroke. Max Adler, the captain of your team, was sent to the hospital. I mean, talk about the highs and lows of those 10 days. I mean, it was like summer camp to me. I had so much fun.
I had a great time too. And I think just it actually happening, the process of actually getting out to Annapolis and, you know, meeting as a team for the first time too, because everything was just on Zoom calls, and all that stuff. Obviously, you know, we have some guys out here in Denver, but everyone's kind of, you know, spread out across the country, or a lot of guys are from Canada as well. So finally getting to Annapolis and meeting everyone and kind of coming together as a team, I think that was awesome. Cause you know, we were in a lockdown pretty much. And this was kind of, things were kind of opening up a little bit. As you mentioned, MLS was going on, and then Major League Lacrosse We were one of the first sports back. So getting back and being competitive and just kind of being around the guys and seeing what kind of chemistry they have was awesome. Summer camp, yes, I had an amazing time, ate amazing food, had great conversations, had some long late nights, and played, there was a lot of competitive lacrosse being played.
One of the big things in the storylines of the summer was how close the Outlaws team was compared to everyone else. So each team, the six teams in the league, each one had a floor, but John Grant Jr. was saying that you guys you had to rip each other apart because they couldn't just get away from each other. Do you think that was one of your biggest strengths outside of the skill level that, the Outlaws team has had? What was that experience like? Can you describe just those late nights in the hotel rooms and just that bonding experience?
Yeah, those guys couldn't be separated. And I think a lot of that has to, the guys up front, as far as coaching staff, John Cohen and Ken Clausen, Matt Bocklet, obviously Junior. They built something here where everyone just kind of buys in. And then, the top guys like Adler and Mikey Schlosser, those guys have really kind of just reeled everybody in, and the chemistry was just unbelievable. The guys only hung out with each other, at the hotel, even after the last game of the season, when we lost, it was tough to get everyone to leave. Everyone's still, in contact. And I think that was a big thing was the chemistry. And, it was hard for those guys to, lose that final game, but, it's definitely a brotherhood.
You guys lost twice in the championship game. In one of my pregame hits for ESPN, I said, you felt that the ring was ripped right off of your finger. How does it feel to have the ring ripped off of your finger twice?
Yeah. I've been around these guys for a few years now, and I know, the previous season was a really tough one for them. So coming to Annapolis was kind of a chance, a little bit of a revenge opportunity to, go back and get the trophy. And obviously it didn't work out. So it's tough. And these guys are passionate. You see these guys, they are so passionate. And I love seeing that because, they're not your big four athletes. These guys are literally playing for the love of the game. And there's so much passion behind it, and they take it to heart. So it was tough to see them, come up short in the last game.
Coming up short in that last game, John Grant Jr., for those of you who don't know, he's like the Tom Brady of Major League Lacrosse. The guy holds every single offensive record. He is now a player coach, which is unheard of. He's played for over 20 years. The guy was getting 100 cc's of fluid leaked from his knees before playing. And he told me, at least in a private interview, that this was going to be his last year. But just seeing how much he put into that last game, I just don't think that he's going to hang it up just quite yet. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Junior's kind of like me with The Bachelor. He's always says he's done, but and comes back. He's actually a lot more successful than I've been on The Bachelor, though. Junior's been great to be around. The guys love playing with him, and obviously, he's a player coach. And the guy obviously is, I think, the greatest of all time. It's just cool to kind of see him. It was cool to see him out there. At his age, I couldn't even imagine, being out there, and I'm 10 years younger than him, shoot, even more, I don't even know. But the guy is just, it's second nature for him. And, it was cool to be able to watch him play and do some cool things and mostly just talk with the guys, all the guys. I did some player interviews while I was out there, and all the guys just talked about how excited they were to play with Junior and learn from him. And, the history that the guy has in the game is insane.
Yeah, the talent that you guys brought back on offense. I'm sure that Junior rubbed off on a kid named Ryan Lee, offensive player of the year. How special
Unreal.
Is he?
Ryan Lee is, I don't take favorites, but I love watching that kid play. He obviously has a knack for scoring, and he can get to the goal. But he learned a lot, from Junior, and Junior kind of took him under his wing, and they kind of bumped heads here and there, but it was more of a, more of a learning type thing. And Ryan listened and adapted and was great. he was unreal that whole season. So I think it was super beneficial for him to obviously play under Junior.
They talk a lot about in lacrosse, the two-man game. I mean, that's a Canadian aspect. Do you feel like that's kind of the strategy of how you guys run your offense, or is there, a different style that you run through?
Yeah. I mean, I let those guys, do their thing. Junior is running the offense and, obviously, he knows what he's doing. So, yeah, but no, I learned a lot too. Like, the Canadian game's a lot different than, different. What we do out here. So, and Ryan is one of those Canadian players. So Junior as well. So it is different, but I think it worked well for us. And, I think obviously next season we're looking forward to adapting to see, what we can fix and hopefully get that trophy back.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. I hope that I can come back in full force. I made so many amazing friendships, relationships. The big glaring question that I think everyone wants to ask is, you talked about legendary players, John Grant Jr. being one of them, but the other one is a guy named Paul Rabil, who walked away from the league, started his own league, got hundreds of thousands of dollars in, advertising and seed money. Do you think it's a good or a bad thing to have a competitor like the PLL on the mainstream?
I think the PLL does a great job in different aspects, from a marketing perspective, from a brand perspective. I always think it's great to have competitors. You can learn from each other. I would love to see, kind of a MLL versus PLL kind of all-star game or championship game. The way I look at it, obviously, it's functioned as two different leagues. I kind of see it as a National League and an American League type deal. Mm-hmm. Major League Lacrosse, we've been around for 20 years, and obviously PLL is a new shiny toy. But at the same time, I think there's different aspects from both leagues. Obviously, PLL took a lot from Major League Lacrosse, and I think we're also learning a lot of different things that they're doing. So I think it's great to have competitors with anything. It's a good opportunity for lacrosse. And I think the more lacrosse, the better. The more people can see lacrosse on TV or, anywhere. I think it's good to get in front of, the non-traditional fans to get more of a fan base that's not, engulfed in the lacrosse world.
This summer, Black Lives Matter was such an initiative, and it was pushed to the forefront of Major League Lacrosse that it had to be addressed. Just the racial injustices of the players that they've felt, the stories that they've told. What can you say about the continued passion that these guys, Isaiah Davis Allen and others have put in for the game of lacrosse, not only just here, but just nationally? Can you speak on, the pride or what your thoughts are of that effort that they've put in?
Yeah, no, it's great. I was able to speak with, those guys, off the field, and they're very passionate about it. And it's a tough position, right? Because, in general, obviously I can't speak on that, from personal experience, but, mm-hmm. We're out there in a bubble, the first team back in first sport back in a pandemic. And there's all this stuff that's just going on. And I think to be able to get to, the forefront and have a voice and take a stance and just show that, there's things that are being done. And at the same time, there's people that are backing them up. The consistency is something that, I've saw even after, we left the bubble. So, it's great to see, and, we're here to support them as much as we can and make their voice be heard.
Who has better hair than Mikey Schlosser?
Nobody. I mean, the way that flow comes out of the back of his helmet, it's tough to beat. He's just a great guy, man. He's just a really good guy.
Who has a better mustache than Ryan Lee? I mean, no, I don't know. It seems like the Outlaws, you got a lot of character and swag.
Oh yeah, a lot of swag on that team. I mean, you just named two guys with some swag there, and then you got Max Adler, who's like drill sergeant guy. just doing push-ups in the corner all the time.
Charge. I know. Oh, yeah. I know. A few of the Boston Cannons players I've seen on social media are promoting the 16th annual Wells Crowther virtual 5K. This is a 5K race, of course, in honor of Wells Crowther, a 1999 graduate of Boston College who lost his life in one of the towers during 9/11. That story every single year. If anyone has not seen it or heard it, it is a fascinating 15-minute story that will make you bawl your eyes out. So the Wells Crowther 5K now, of course, because of COVID, it's being run virtually. Will you be participating?
You know, I've seen some of the Cannons players post about it on Twitter. So, you know, I'll participate if you're going to participate.
Okay. All right. So I think we should just commit to it. Like one day this week, we're going to do like an Insta Live.
this is something funny. This is something easy for me to commit to, you know, since I have commitment issues, this is definitely something I can commit to.
So for those who are interested, yeah, the Wells Crowther 5K, it benefits the Wells Crowther Charitable Trust, which supports organizations committing to assisting young people in becoming exemplary adults through education, health, recreation, and character development. It's always presented to a Boston College senior, with the funds going to a nonprofit of their choice. So, you know, it's kids helping kids, helping other 501c3s. So I will be participating, and I think we should plan on that. Last question for the interview. Last question. Do you know the colors of the roses and what they mean?
The colors of the roses.
Will you accept my
yellow rose?
Will you accept my yellow rose, which means platonic friendship?
Yes, absolutely. I wish I had a lot more yellow roses. Is that what it really means?
It really, wait, hold on. I love roses. So my Hebrew name is Shoshana. My Hebrew name is Shoshana, which means rose.
Nice.
Yeah. And
that's my mom's name.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So my middle initial is R. People always think it's Rose, but it's really Robin. But yeah, so these are what the roses means. How do you not know this? You've been on like 5 seasons of The Bachelor. You don't know what the roses
mean? We only do red roses. But
okay,
are you sure yellow means that? Because I thought it meant like, I thought it was like I thought yellow was sympathy.
Sympathy, platonic friendship. That's what Google says. So red roses mean passion, love, and desire. White roses mean innocence, purity, spirituality, and new beginnings. I picked two dozen yellow roses the other day. So, you know, perfect. I'm just all about, you want to talk about commitment issues? All about the platonic friendship rose.
There you go. I'm all in on the yellow roses.
Chris Bukowski, would you want to plug anything before I hand this rose off to you?
Plug anything? Oh, no. Let's just let's get this pandemic over with. You know, everyone stay healthy.
Play some lacrosse, man.
Let's play some lacrosse. Let's get to next season, and you know, let's get fans back. You know, out watching lacrosse and in, you know, sports in general. And yeah, let's just power through this and hope for the best.
It's crazy because the Denver Outlaws are one team, but you guys packed 30,000 fans on a July 4th game. The fan base out in Denver is remarkable. And I'm sure that community is really hurting because, listen, Denver Broncos, they might have beat the Patriots, but they suck.
Yeah, they're bad. Let me tell you, and people are so passionate about lacrosse here. We're actually going to be playing out of a new stadium next year out in Glendale, which we're super excited about. The rugby team used to play there. It's a perfect stadium for lacrosse, and we're so excited to be playing out there. So we're even more excited if we're going to be able to have fans over there. So hopefully, you know, by the time the season gets rolling, we're back to some more normalcy.
Chris Bukowski on Instagram, you had like some lacrosse stick in one of the posts, and you were like, I just want to get picked up. Are you that good that you could play professional lacrosse?
I was telling Matt Bachlett, I'm like, listen, like, and I was telling Junior too, it's like, let's get me rolling here. Let's start training now. I'm trying out for open tryouts next year. They just laughed at me, but I thought it would be fun. I'm more of a baseball player than a lacrosse player. But hey, I think, you know, if Junior can play when he's you know, 47, I feel like I could maybe hang for a couple minutes.
I don't know. We'll throw you a net.
No, those guys are crazy.
And a cup on you.
Goalies are insane. I could never stand in net like those guys.
I agree. Well, Chris, thanks so much for your time. This was very fun.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Roses are a girl's best friend, at least in my book. I try to buy myself flowers every Friday, even though sometimes it kind of turns into every 2 weeks. I don't know. I think it really lightens up the room and it means something. Now we know the meaning of the different colors of the roses.
Okay,
roses.
I have something to bring to you, a question.
Sure.
Is it a bit insulting? Okay, so I'll lay the setting down for you. So my friend, he really, really likes this girl.
Yeah.
They've been friends their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But he's never made a move. You know, they've been talking recently.
You're speaking my language. This has happened a million times.
Okay, but
to
they've
me.
Been talking more and more recently. And he bought her flowers. And he thought that was just going to flip the switch. And he was going to start, you know,
he was going to start. He was going to start moving in the bedroom.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Do you think that's insulting? Just buy the fact that he thought he could just buy flowers. And
no, I think that he's probably doing the right thing and treading lightly. If all of a sudden he just kind of makes a move and takes her out to dinner and like I just aggressively pulls her in and kisses her, I think that's more shocking. He needs to drop hints and let her know that he has feelings for her that are outside of the friendship. But those are the best type of relationships. That girl has to be cognizant of this. That happened to me with my best friend in college. I mean, he was trying to drop hints left and right, and yeah. I was in another world. I mean, I was depressed my senior year. Like, I just couldn't see beyond the trees, and I didn't even realize that he was literally, like, pulling me in. I mean, I was spending so much time with him.
Sure.
So she has to be, like, cognizant and knowing, but you got to keep dropping. If he really wants her, you got to keep dropping hints. But, yeah, I mean, like, buying her flowers, I don't know. That's just kind of weird to me. He bought her flowers.
It was following a day where she had a rough day.
Oh, that's perfect.
You
yes.
know? So
that's
I
perfect.
Liked, I liked
that's
the idea,
really
the sentiment.
Good. Yes.
But I thought it was insulting that he thought he was going to...
That was just going to open doors?
Well, more or less, like, get with her. Like, move to, like, first or second base. Get on the base pass.
No,
you know?
I think that he has to drop more hints, but he's got to be creative. He's got to mix it up. Got to mix up the offense,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You got to throw in some screens, RPOs, and, you know, and go routes.
Roll the pocket.
Yeah, no, you got to roll out of the pocket, go routes, you know.
I know he's listening to this too, so this is great. This is
no,
great.
I think, yeah, listen.
You just think he should
I
keep
think,
going.
No, you know what? Yeah, keep going, because there have been times where that definitely meant a lot. There have been times where I've been super down, and even one of my girlfriends, actually, Thursday's guest.
Yeah.
Thursday's guest, Halloween. Well, Thursday for Friday. Halloween guest, Joy Taylor of Fox Sports 1, of Colin Cowherd. She's going to be on the show.
Very excited.
Joy, last year when I was in LA, I just, I lost out on a job and I was devastated because I knew that the next step was me moving home to Boston and felt like a failure and all that. And Joy sent me, you know, a dozen roses, bouquet of flowers. And I think it's such a sentiment and it's something that you'll never forget. So at least for him, in that sense, it's a step in the right direction.
Okay, good. A step out of the friend zone. And just hanging out with the two of them, he is so firm in the friend zone.
No, but that's good. That's good.
I was kind of making
a joke
to him.
He has to slowly melt the ice like an iceberg.
Yeah, I was making
the
joke.
It can't be all of a sudden she's going to freak out and run.
I was in the room over, and I made the joke to him. I was like, yo, motherfucker, you bought flowers. Just because you bought flowers, like, I still have a better chance of getting with her than you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was one of those. It's one of those kind of situations that they're such good friends that it's hard to see them.
Yeah.
Another
big
one.
Biggest piece of advice, don't like, as your buddy or any of his other buddies, like, don't have them chime in and be like, you know, he likes you. Like, that's the most annoying thing ever. Like,
okay.
It has to be him and him only.
Heard. Yeah. No, I haven't said anything to her because I'm not.
Idiot. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes, like, some of the buddies, at least, like.
Oh yeah, we'll drop super.
We'll like
hint
drop
bombs.
Hints and like be like, oh yeah, you should go or you should go. You know, be alone with him. It's like no. It's got to be him and him alone. And on that note, I guess we did girl talk two weeks in a row.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, but like that was on. Listen, we're trying to keep the segments besides All Feelings No Facts on Tuesdays. Trying to keep the segments to a minimum.
Yeah, loose. Just a nice conversation.
Halloween episode. Who is ready?
Boo.
See you next time.
Bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.